Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back in on the drive, coming up in 30 minutes. We will give you a chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. Plus, Sean sees a similarity between Adalberto Mondesi and a potential baseball Hall of Famer. Plus, we talked to Denny Matthews earlier about Danny Duffy, who has got off to a really good start this season. Danny Duffy has always been very tough to gauge and predict. We'll talk about Danny Duffy coming up in just a little bit. But today, Sammy Watkins was the topic of conversation on Good Morning Football, and Peter Schrager was 100% driving the hype train for Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins is the most difficult Chiefs player to predict. Like, if we made a list of who you think the 10 most important Chiefs players are on the team, I think we all have a pretty good understanding of what they're going to be. Like, I got a pretty good understanding that Mahomes is going to be good. I don't know what the numbers are going to be because they were so gaudy last year, but Mahomes, I feel very confident, is one of the five best quarterbacks in the NFL. Talk about Tyrann Mathieu. You talk about Frank Clark. You talk about Tyreek Hill, if he's going to be available, or Travis Kelce. I think these guys have enough of a track record and body of work that we seem to understand what they're going to be. I don't know how anyone can accurately predict what Sammy Watkins is going to do this season. Like, how? I don't know how many games he's going to play. I don't know how available he's going to be. I don't know what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill. I just don't know how in May we can sit here and accurately predict what Sammy Watkins is going to do this upcoming season.
It's tough, but his importance is paramount. If we made that list that you're talking about, obviously we're all going to have Patrick Mahomes at the very top when it comes to most important Chiefs. But I've got Sammy, man, at number two or number three. I think he's that important. A lot of that is based on other guys. A lot of that is because we don't know how long Tyreek Hill is going to be suspended. But we do know at some point he is going to be. Once that happens, we find out how many games, Sammy Watkins becomes your number one wide receiver. He gets paid like it. Now it's time to play like it for at least a portion of time. I think Sammy Watkins is good. I think the problem is he's so often injured that, like you said, it's kind of tough to put expectations on him. You can't necessarily count on Sammy Watkins because he doesn't stay healthy.
I mean, that's the honest truth when it comes to Sammy Watkins. And sometimes I think people get looked at as Debbie Downers when you doubt Sammy Watkins. I just don't know how you can say you know what kind of production you're going to get. Like, let's go through the last 3 years of Sammy Watkins. Now, there's no denying the first two, he was a really good receiver. Had 982 yards his rookie season. His second season had 1,000 yards. And the last three seasons have just been lean years. 28 catches, 430 yards in Buffalo. All right, bad quarterback in Buffalo. You go to a new situation. 2 years ago for the Los Angeles Rams, played in 14 games, 593 receiving yards, 39 catches, 8 touchdowns. All right, he wasn't the number one option. They got a lot of offensive pieces. All right, last year, when he was healthy, he was really good. Started in 9 games, had 500 yards, 3 touchdowns. But when you're making $16 million a year, you just got to be a little bit more available than that. If you want to talk about this offense being as dynamic as they were last season, man, it starts with Sammy Watkins. You know you're not going to have Tyreek Hill for some portion of time. You're not going to have Kareem Hunt at the beginning of the season the same way that you had. I mean, Sammy Watkins has got to step up. At the end of the season, we got to be talking about Sammy Watkins having 900 or more receiving yards. If it's another one of these, he plays in 10 games, starts in 8, but he's banged up a little bit. I don't know if this offense can hit anything close to the ceiling they had last year.
Isn't that what you expect based on his MO, based on what Sammy Watkins has been throughout his entire career?
I just don't know. Like, I mean, I feel like you're a lot more certain with Sammy Watkins when I think injuries are very difficult to predict. Like, we talk a lot about contract years with players. I mean, Sammy Watkins is in a form of a contract year. Like, if you look at the way that his contract is structured and the Chiefs can get out of it, if he doesn't perform at this high level, he will just get cut, and then I think he'll be facing he's 26 years old. He's had 4 disappointing, banged-up kind of seasons, and then that big money's not there. If he plays really well, Chiefs probably restructure that deal, especially given the uncertainty around Tyreek Hill, and you get one more massive payday. I just don't know with Sammy Watkins. Sometimes I feel like that's a possible answer. I just don't know what Watkins is going to do. You seem to can see into the future like your brand from Game of Thrones.
No, I'm more like Miss Cleo.
And then see that week six he's going to get hurt and have 300 yards. I just don't know how anyone can say they know what's going to happen this year with Sammy Watkins.
Just look at his career. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope that Sammy Watkins has 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns like Tyreek Hill had.
I don't think he's going to do that.
No way. Even if he's healthy, he's not going to do that. I just hope that he stays healthy. The head-scratching season for me is the one a couple of years ago, right before the Chiefs signed him when he played for the Rams. He just kind of brushed over it, where he had 39 receptions and 593 yards. Now, he did have 8 touchdowns. He played with one of the best offenses in the league that year, with one of the best quarterbacks in the league that year, where all the wide receivers had huge numbers, and for some reason, he didn't. When I talk about his injuries, man, sometimes there's guys it's easy to predict. Dean Wade, Greg Oden, Sammy Watkins. Those guys are just probably likely going to get hurt, and the problem is that you're counting on them. It'd be one thing if we're talking about DeMarcus Robinson and what happens if he's not there for 16 games. Okay, he's your number 3 or number 4 wide receiver, whatever. Sammy Watkins, in all likelihood, is going to have to be your number 1 wide receiver for an offense that was the 3rd best in the history of the game. The only way this team is going to continue to beat teams is if they put up 32, 35 points a game. The only way they did that was because they had Tyreek Hill. With him off the field, you're counting on Sammy Watkins. Basically what I'm saying is, if he gets hurt, you're screwed. If he gets hurt at the same time that Tyreek Hill is suspended, then all of a sudden, what are we talking about? DeMarcus Robinson being your number 1 wide receiver, Garrett Dieter being an important part of this team, my guy Mecole Hardman all of a sudden becomes your number 2 or your number 3. The scary thing is that in the past, the Chiefs haven't really, and when I say the past, just last year, haven't really counted on Sammy Watkins. What he did was kind of icing on the cake. This year, they're counting on Sammy Watkins to be the guy that makes $15 million.
No, you're right. I mean, there's certainly no denying that. You just have a different sense than me. I don't know how anyone can accurately tell you what to expect from Sammy Watkins this year. I wouldn't be surprised if Sammy Watkins has 1,000 yards with 8 touchdowns. I also wouldn't be surprised if he got hurt week 4 and only had 300 yards receiving this year. Peter Schrager of Good Morning Football is all over the Sammy Watkins hype train.
I'm hearing stuff, guys, and I know we've been down this road. Sammy Watkins looks incredible.
Okay.
And that could just be spin.
I like this road.
That could just be spin, but it's from the local guys, and it's also from people that know the organization very well, saying Sammy's finally in the best shape of his life, that if there is a Tyreek Hill issue, if Tyreek Hill's not going to be on the field, if they have to miss him, Sammy Watkins is ready.
All right, I'm willing to reset when it comes to Sammy Watkins. You're not selling me this Sammy Watkins is finally in the best shape of his career. Why was he not in the best shape of his career last year? Why was he not in the best shape of his career 2 years ago? Again, if you want to say that Watkins is feeling good and he's bounced back from his injury, all right. You are not getting me with the Sammy Watkins is in the best shape of his career jig in May. Nope, I'm not falling for it, not one bit.
I don't necessarily think that Sammy Watkins is the most difficult player on this team to figure out. I think that he's amongst a few. I would have Damian Williams in there, and then on the defensive side of the ball, I don't know what I'm going to get it from a couple of guys, Anthony Hitchens or Kendall Fuller. I would put them all in that same Sammy Watkins category where I hope that they're going to do what I think they can do, because when Sammy Watkins is good, he's great. We saw that last year. You mentioned he's had a 1,000-yard wide receiver his second year with the Bills. The problem is he's been so inconsistent. I would say the same thing about Kendall Fuller. I'd say the same thing about Anthony Hitchens. And when you're talking about expectations, do we really know what you're going to get out of Damian Williams this year, the first time that we're going to see him as a feature back for an entire season?
I feel like you're the only one in Kansas City that doesn't seem to know what the Chiefs have in Damian Williams.
I like him. I don't love him. I just want to see more. The sample size is just too small. The Chiefs paid him right away, and it seems like we've gotten a little bit spoiled.
He got no money, though. I mean, you say paid him like he got paid like he's Sammy Watkins. I mean, he's making $2 million this year. He didn't get that much money.
But he got paid $2 million after 2 weeks. He performed for about 5 minutes, and the Chiefs went, uh-oh, we don't have a better option. You look pretty damn good. Here's the money. That's why they paid Damian Williams, because they didn't have a better option at the time. That was 5 minutes after Kareem Hunt got cut that he got paid.
I mean, he scored 13 touchdowns the rest of the season, plus he plays running back in Andy Reid's offense with Patrick Mahomes. I have absolutely no – now, I'm not saying he's going to be Kareem Hunt. I have absolutely no worries or no concern about Damian Williams this season if he's healthy. Literally no concern if he's healthy.
I think he's going to be good, but according to ESPN NFL.com Fantasy Football, they've got him as a second-round selection.
Scored 13 touchdowns. I mean, that matters. If 13 touchdowns matter.
Again, I think he's good. I just want to see a bigger sample size.
Let's go on Sammy Watkins' Twitter account. I don't know if you've seen Sammy Watkins' Twitter account or not, but he might be the most enlightened individual I've ever seen in my entire life.
Really?
I will be the best this year. Mark my word. I want it more now than I ever did. before in my life.
Is this a Tim Tebow speech?
I'm sacrificing everything to get where I once was. The world will now get to witness my greatness again. Hashtag Starship 14. Hashtag Limitless 14.
Wow.
That's from Sammy Watkins. Waking up like a champion. He said that at 11:45 in the morning. After a nice workout. Maybe had a nice
protein.
He's
not getting hurt this year. Why didn't you tell me that earlier?
I mean, maybe had a nice protein shake, a nice smoothie. He's going out working to be the best that he can be. Oh, there's more. This is from the Twitter account of one Sammy Watkins. We as a consciousness are beyond this world. We have to start seeking knowledge, intelligence, and being logical with our relationships, environments, friends, conversations. All that plays a part on this journey.
So true. So true.
Earth is a school. Heaven is here, and it's free.
Huh?
Earth is a school. Heaven is here, and it's free.
Yeah, that last part went way over my head.
Hashtag Starship 14. Hashtag Limitless 14. I would love to know what Earth is a school, heaven is here, and it's free means. Because I don't know what it means. Like, I'm not clearly woke enough, or I don't have a higher enough thinking to
deep
really
thoughts
understand
with Sammy
what
Watkins.
That means.
I don't know what that means either.
Oh, there's more. We, as a consciousness, need to interstand. Not understand, interstand.
Understand, yeah.
We are spaceless, timeless. This third-dimensional world is not ours. We have a higher calling. We are here to bring change and shift the consciousness. We, as a consciousness, are way more than just a name or color or religion or ethnicity.
Now, that one I understand.
That one actually makes a little bit of sense.
That one I understand.
That one makes a little bit of sense, what he's talking about.
Not really.
You think that's it with Sammy Watkins?
I would hope so.
No, there's more. There's more.
Can he just tell me he's not going to get hurt?
Tap into the unknown. The unseen.
Okay.
And know that you're being guided from within by something that's higher. It cannot be explained or figured out because it's not on you. It's in love. All you can be is fearless.
True.
I mean, there's more to this. We could literally do this.
So true.
We could literally do this for the next 45
minutes. Do we have to?
He has that many tweets.
Very introspective thinker.
I keep telling you, if you fail the NFL drug test, you're an idiot. Because Sammy Watkins is finding a way to pass it every single time. Like, he's finding a way to pass it. If that person's not using marijuana, then I got to quit. Because I feel very strongly that he uses marijuana. Very strong. I don't know. I'm not accusing the man of something. But if you tweet like that, you smoke weed from time to time.
I think there's an outside chance.
I don't care
that
you smoke weed from time to time.
There's a chance, yeah.
But you recreationally smoke marijuana from time to time. Coming up in a little bit, we will give you a chance to win $1,000 on our National Cash Contest. Plus, Sean sees a similarity between Adalberto Mondesi and Carlos Beltran. We'll discuss it next. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
I can't get over the fact that that man Sammy Watkins says interstand.
You got to understand what he's saying. I don't think you do. That's the problem.
Like, it would make sense if he said overstand.
Would it?
Like, that would make sense. Like, you know, like, instead of like understand, like, remember that sign? I think it's like 10 things I hate about you. And it's like, you can be underwhelmed or overwhelmed. Why can't you just be whelmed? Like, I would get it if he was like, I overstand. The fact that he said interstand is just so funny to me.
I understand what he's trying to say. Maybe
like,
you don't.
Like, it's legitimately funny to me. Coming up in a little bit, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 on our National Cash Contest. Plus, Chiefs players were not happy with the way Game of Thrones ended, and we will all tell you our favorite finishes to a television show. We'll talk about that. Plus, we'll get back into the Kansas City Chiefs as Brooke Pryor thinks that the Chiefs are done making moves prior to training camp. But let's switch gear and talk a little bit of Royals baseball. You think there's a similarity between Mondesi and Carlos Beltran?
Yeah, Carlos Beltran was a 5-2 player. The frustrating thing with Beltran in Kansas City, kind of like Damon, kind of like Guy, kind of like Zach Greinke, was if you're a Royals fan, you knew that the guy was a really good baseball player. You knew that he was about to hit his prime, and you knew there was a good chance it was going to be in a uniform other than the Kansas City Royals. If you think about superstars in Kansas City, and you don't think Beltran was a superstar, right? Just a star.
No, I don't think he was a superstar. I mean, I don't think there's many superstars in baseball. I think that Carlos Beltran in Kansas City, I don't think he ever was a superstar, honestly. I think he was a really solid 5-tool player when he was here.
Do you think Adalberto Mondesi has the potential to become a superstar, or do you think his ceiling is Carlos Beltran? Because I would argue that the Royals' only superstar they've ever had is George Brett. If you go back to the World Series teams, look, they had a lot of really good players. Nobody's going to say anything to the contrary when it comes to Kane and Moose and Hosmer and all those guys. But none of them, I would say, were superstars. I don't think Zach Greinke was exactly a superstar. Same thing with Bo Jackson. I think he was a really popular player. He had a great Nike campaign. But when you talk about a superstar, I think it's George Brett, and that's the end of the story. But when you talk about comparisons, I see a lot of similarities between Carlos Beltran and Adalberto Mondesi. Both guys that can run, both guys that can hit, both guys that can field, both guys that you want around in the clubhouse. They're young, they're talented, they're about to come into their prime. But unfortunately, much like Beltran and Damon and Dye, they're probably not going to do it as a Royal.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand a little bit, because sometimes I think we have this conversation when we talk about Hall of Fame. Like, not everybody in the Hall of Fame is Barry Sanders. Not everybody in the Hall of Fame is Tom Brady. Like, there are lesser players that make the Hall of Fame. So when you say superstars since George Brett, like, we got to put into context. George Brett, realistically, might be one of the 20 greatest baseball players ever.
Sure.
Like, unanimous first ballot, highest percentage to go in the Hall of Fame. Like, that's a different level. That's not superstar.
I'm talking about the pace that he's on right now. I'm not saying that when it's all said and done, he's going to end up there. But the pace that he's on, you just heard BK read us the numbers. He's on pace for almost 60 steals and 20 home runs. And this is the first full season we've gotten a chance to see him.
But I think when you bring up Carlos Beltran and you say that he wasn't a superstar the way Brett was, I think we got to put into context. No one was a superstar the way that Brett was. Again, he's a top 20 player. I mean, you could sign me up for this being Adalberto Mondesi. Like, while Carlos Beltran was here, his career average was .288, and he was a guy that hit 18 to 22 home runs a season and drove in 80 RBIs. If you're telling me that's what your shortstop can do, that he can be a guy that hits .280, .290, hit for a little bit of power, steal some bases, he's probably a little bit faster and a better base stealer than Carlos Beltran, you'll sign me up for it. Like, I want to do keep that in perspective. Carlos Beltran, I think, will make the Hall of Fame at some point. I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but he will eventually get there. So if you're telling me that you can lock in the prime of Adalberto Mondesi and maybe sign him to a contract long-term where you can have his 27, 28, and 29 years, and he can be a guy that every year you can pencil in to hit .290, hit 15 to 20 home runs, steal 30 to 40 bases. Absolutely sign me up for that.
Do you think that's unrealistic, or do you just think that's unrealistic in a Royals uniform? Because this guy's way ahead. Well, I think he's at a pace. You said you saw this coming. I think that he's a better baseball player faster than I was expecting. But I think 3 or 4 years from now, he could be a better baseball player than Carlos Beltran ever was.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'm not necessarily thinking about him being off the team. Like, if I'm the Royals, what I would be trying to do if I'm him, I would say, look at how baseball is changing. Look at Ronald Acuna. Look at some of the deals we've seen this offseason. I'd be trying to seriously negotiate with Adalberto Mondesi and say, we would love for you to play your prime, the entirety of your prime here in Kansas City. What's the number to make that happen? What's the number that you'll be happy? What's the number that we can live with, which gives us a little bit of flexibility? We want to take care of you long term. We think you're somebody to build around. We want to identify and establish you as the face of this organization, and we're willing to give you a huge financial commitment to say so. So that's where I would be thinking. I wouldn't be thinking about only these 4 years. I'd be thinking about the next 6 years with Adalberto Mondesi, or the next 7 years of Mondesi, not the next four.
Why would the Royals not do that? We talk a lot of times in sports, it's better to be proactive and not reactive. In the case of Mondesi, haven't the Royals seen enough to pay him? You mentioned Acuna and some of those guys that have gotten the big contracts before they've actually proven it. Haven't the Royals and their brass seen enough for Mondesi? Because if you talk about the core of this baseball team and where they're headed, there have been a lot of guys this year that have had nice seasons, maybe even career years in the case of Alex Gordon. But how much longer is he going to be around? Yes, Salvi's going to be healthy next year, but how much longer is he going to be around? In the case of Hunter Dozier, he's coming back down to earth. Whit Merrifield's a little long in the tooth, even though he's a great baseball player. The only real player that you know that could potentially be around for the next decade and be a superstar or at least an all-star caliber player is Mondesi.
I wouldn't fault them if they did it today, but I don't think they need to be in a rush to do it. Because as great as Mondesi is, and I think the diversity of skills that he's shown, he still hasn't shown you if he can do it for a full 162.
But the price tag keeps going up and up and up. That's why you have to be proactive and not reactive and pay him before he does
it. Yeah, but we say that, though. I mean, how is the price tag going up? I mean, the Royals have club control of him for the next 4 seasons. Like, how much more is the price tag going to be in May as opposed to when you can sign him in November or December? I don't know if it's going up that substantial where you can't sign him. It really comes down to, does Adalberto Mondesi want to get the deal done? Do you want to lock yourself in long term and give yourself a little bit of cost control and avoid arbitration and avoid all of that and lock in a certain amount of money? I don't think there's going to be some drastic shift over the next couple of months where you can't sign him. We have yet to see him do it for a full 162. I'm all for signing him. Tomorrow, if they announce they sign him, I would not crush the deal. I'd be in favor of signing the deal. But I'm saying if you're the Royals and you know you have club control for the next 4 years, think about it. Next year, He doesn't even start arbitration yet. I would just say there's no reason to rush to give him $100 million guaranteed. Get this full year, see if he can stay healthy and do it for a full 162, and then be willing to negotiate with him and his agent.
That's the problem, though, is if he does do it for a full 162, that's when the price tag starts to go up. That's when his agent goes, all right, you're talking about a guy that's still so young, about to come into his prime, and isn't even playing his best baseball yet, and he's already had a season where if he hits the numbers that he's on pace to right now, if he finishes at this pace, C-Dot, where he hits 275 and steals 60 bases and has 20 home runs and drives in 133 RBI, yeah, you can bet that price tag is going to go way up.
Yeah, but I mean, what's the most it could be? Like, you keep saying way up. What's the most it could be this offseason? So let's say you go to Adalberto Mondesi and you say, we want to sign you for the next 6 years. What's the most it can be?
$100 million, probably.
That's the absolute most it can be. No higher than
that. $100 million is a lot of money when you're talking about the Kansas City Royals. I mean, when's
not
the last
really,
time?
Though. Over 6 years? I mean, they're paying now $16 million to Danny Duffy and to Ian Kennedy. Like, that's basically what the average
is. And how's that working out? They paid Ian Kennedy because they paid a guy that they thought, well, we've already seen what he can do. The key is in baseball to pay a guy before he actually has success.
That's what you're doing with Adalberto Mondesi. I mean, Mondesi's 23 years old. Like, that's nothing like Ian Kennedy.
But it's one thing to have him locked up. They've got him locked up for what? The next 4 years?
The next four seasons.
The next 4 years, there's a good chance that within the next 4 years, the Royals aren't a good baseball team. I'm suggesting you lock him up for the next 10 years or for the next 7 years, like you're talking about.
Why would Adalberto Mondesi sign a 10-year contract?
I'm talking about from the Royals' perspective. I'm not talking about from Mondesi.
Yeah, but
Mondesi wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I think also in these deals, like, I mean, the Royals can offer him a 15-year deal. You got to be willing to sign the deal.
If I'm down to sign him to a lifetime contract. Yeah. Like, if he's willing to do it, they should sign him up. There's zero chance that he would sign anything longer than like a 5 or 6 year deal.
So next year they have team control at age 24, and they have 3 years of arbitration at 25, 26, and 27. If I'm the Royals, I go to Adalberto Mondesi at the end of the season, and I say, we want to lock you in for the next 6 years. So that locks you in for ages 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29.
Now we're talking.
So I would say, and the most I'm willing to spend is $100 million. That's fair to me. That's very fair to me for a guy who, at the most, can have one season in which he played really well.
And that gives
I think that's a fair number.
I think it's fair, too. And what that does is gives you a chance, the chance that you didn't have with Zach Greinke. You shipped him out before he hit his prime as a Royal. Same thing with Damon. Same thing with Jermaine Dye. We've seen this time and time again here in Kansas City where a guy was about to be a superstar, which is why I say lock him up now so he becomes that superstar in a Royals uniform.
Yeah, no, I mean, then you and I are on the same side. That's what I'm advocating for. I'm advocating for wait till the end of the season, sign him to a 6 year deal. If it costs $100, get it done. I mean, $690 would be perfect. Have him sign the 6 year deal and live with that. Your star of your team for the next 6 years is Adalberto Mondesi. Coming up in a little bit, we will give you a chance to win $1,000 in a national cash contest. Plus, Chiefs players were mad about the way Game of Thrones ended, and we'll tell you our favorite series finale. We'll do that next. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in 30 minutes, we will get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. In 15 minutes, Brooke Pryor says that the Chiefs are done making moves prior to the start of training camp. We'll get into that coming up in just a little bit. But right now, it is your chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Text the word AIR, A-I-R, AIR, to 72881. That's AIR. If you want Chiefs talk and a chance to win $1,000 in the 30s, there's only one station in Kansas City giving you both. Weekdays, 7A to 7P. Message and data rates may apply. Your next chance to win is coming up at 5:30. One more time for those of you in the back that are keeping score. AIR, A-I-R, AIR. Text the word AIR, A-I-R, to 72881. I don't know if you follow it on the Twitter sphere or not, but a lot of Chiefs were very disappointed by the series finale yesterday of Game of Thrones. Emmanuel Agba said that it was probably the worst episode of Game of Thrones. Certainly not something you want to hear about, you know, the last episode ever of Game of Thrones. Darren Lee, new Chief, just he replied and put, ever, just horrible, all exclamation points. A lot of guys on the Chiefs were very unhappy with how the series ended.
Is anybody happy, though? Have you talked to any of your boys, and they're like, what a great finish that was on Game of Thrones?
I don't know anybody that likes the end of
it. It's unanimous. Everybody's pissed.
I don't know anyone that is happy with it. Here is what, excuse me, NBC and the Today Show had to say about the finale.
If you're not one of the estimated 18 million people who tuned in for the season finale last night, you might want to get ready to hear about it all day long. Who should have been king? Who saw it coming? Who did Daenerys' hair? Meanwhile, that online petition to rewrite the entire final season has now passed 1 million signatures. Online mixed reactions. Some fans angry over how the epic HBO series comes to an end.
I wanted more.
I did not like that ending.
Now, we know for sure there is at least one Game of Thrones prequel in the works, and prequel probably isn't a strong enough word because that story goes way back thousands of years. Thrones creator George R. Martin saying on his blog, there is a chance for at least three or four spinoffs also possibly in the works.
Earlier today, I was reading a story, and it was why people get so emotionally invested into series finales of television shows. I think it's very simple. Think about the time commitment and effort it takes to really follow a show. Think about if you are someone that really watches and really loves Game of Thrones. I mean, they're P1, their most dedicated fans.
How many shows have you been P1 for? How many shows have you seen every? The only show that I've seen every episode of is Seinfeld. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, I've probably seen every episode of Chappelle's Show. Big fan of that show. Seen every episode of The Wire, every episode of Friday Night Lights. I mean, there's a lot of shows that I've watched from start to finish. I mean, Game of Thrones, it is 73 episodes of Game of Thrones. 73 episodes. The first episode was in April 17th of 2011.
Wow.
So you have been on an 8-year journey following Sansa Stark and Catelyn Stark and Ned Stark. That's a long time to be invested in having conversations and going back and watching it and listening to podcasts. It's different than movies. Like, movie series can get there. People were emotionally tied up into Avengers. But think about it. To get emotionally tied up into Avengers, you had to watch 22 movies to get to the final end game where you felt emotionally invested in those characters. You've spent hours, years of your life invested into these characters. So when it doesn't end the way that you think it should end, or when it doesn't conclude the way that you think it conclude, I can understand being disappointed. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I just started watching the show, so I don't have the long-term emotional investment. I can't imagine being a fan that caught on to the show. Let's say it was series two or season two or series three. Or even if you're a fan that just started watching more recently, season six or season seven. They had to wait 2 years for the season. It was a 2-year wait. Imagine if the NFL season took a 2-year layoff and then we came back and the season was trash. You would be pissed about it. That's what happened with Game of Thrones. A 2-year hiatus, and now you come back and people are saying that it's rushed, and they got coffee cups in the middle of it, and they got water bottles, and then they don't properly develop characters. I can understand being mad at the way this show ended, given the investment they've asked you to make.
Why can't people, though, enjoy the journey instead of being so worried about the destination, right? We talk about that a lot in sports. We talk about that a lot in life. Can it still be one of, if not the greatest show of all time, just because it had a bad finish?
I mean, it certainly is in the conversation. I just think it's like...
I think the Chiefs were the best team last year, but they had a bad finish.
Yeah, they did, but that's not how it works, though. Like, I think sometimes you live in this that, like, you know, we think about rings and when you do things, but when it's convenient, we forget about it. We remember championships. Like, Jordan's the best player of all time because he has the 6 rings. It's not the, well, oh, he almost got them. No. Like, Game of Thrones, I think, touted itself as the greatest show of all time. It didn't conclude the way many people think. And it wasn't just one episode. It wasn't just like people don't like the series finale. People don't like the entire season 8. People don't like the last 6 episodes of the show. A lot of people don't like the season 7. I mean, they had 13 episodes to really kind of wrap this thing up. And people seem very disappointed in the ending. Like, it just, to me, it's just a huge knock on your legacy. Like, the Warriors that went 73-9, great team, all-time team. Best regular season team of all time. The joke is always going to be that you had a 3-1 lead and you lost to LeBron James and gave him his greatest moment. Like, both can be true. Game of Thrones can be a great all-time show. I just have to knock it a little bit because you can't call your shot, have 2 years to prepare for this series finale and your final season, and you miss the mark to your core fans as clear as Game of Thrones has.
According to USA Today, which is a I think you rely on USA Today, they think that Game of Thrones was the 4th most disappointing series finale of all time. They've got Dexter, Game of Thrones, Lost, Seinfeld, and How I Met Your Mother is the 5 most disappointing finales of all time.
I haven't seen half of those shows, so I can't really comment.
Dexter absolutely applies, and How I Met Your Mother absolutely applies.
I can't say one way or another to either of those, but Seinfeld absolutely applies. They end up in jail at the end of Seinfeld.
That's why I wanted to go by, and I wanted to go by our finales that we have the closeness to. I didn't put it on here, but I love the way that Boy Meets World ends. I know you're going to laugh. It's not The Wire. It's not Sopranos. You cannot end a show better than Boy Meets World did. Now, Boy Meets World probably should have ended when they were in high school. Like, it probably should have ended. There was no reason for them to go to college. And there are some plot holes. Like, I want to figure out how they had the same teacher when they were in sixth grade and when they graduated college. Like, I don't know anybody that's the case for. That's neither here nor there.
Mr. Feeney's had quite the prime of a teacher. Yeah, I got to give him that.
But at the end, where they try to get him to say that they are his favorite students and he won't do it, but they finally get him to break down and do it, and he gives them one final life lesson.
I love
lesson.
How you say it like we all know exactly what you're talking about.
I mean,
about
it's
here.
An all-time show. I mean, so that's up there for me. But my favorite ending of all time is Friday Night Lights.
You know what I just realized, fellas? That is, we got a long way to go, gentlemen. A long way to go. You know what? I'm looking forward to it. Tonight you go home, you get your studies done, you get your rest, because you're going to be back here tomorrow at 6 a.m. Means no later than 5:45. Understood?
Yes, sir!
Clear eyes, full hearts. Yeah, we'll deal with that later. Grab a lap. Have a good night, gentlemen. Good work today.
There are a couple traditions I have in sports. One tradition is before the start of baseball season, I always watch Major League and Bull Durham. And every summer, I rewatch Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights ends as perfectly as a show about high school and college can end. They clear up every storyline. They leave you with a little bit of suspense, so you wonder what's going to happen more. Friday Night Lights has the perfect ending of a television show.
Yeah, USA Today also had the five best finales of all time, and they did have Friday Night Lights on there, along with Newhart, 6 Feet Under, MASH, and The Sopranos.
He just called. He's on his way. Meds come in separately. She had to go to the doctor. Switch birth control.
You talk to Mink again?
It's Carlo. He's going to testify.
Did you know exactly what happened, though, at the end of Sopranos? Or were you kind of going, wait, is he alive? Is he dead? Is the show over? What the hell's going on?
I'm not going to lie to you. I watched it way after it came over. Like, way after it had happened. And I thought that the internet had buffered. Like, legitimately thought that something could happen with the internet and had no clue. Like, people had told me how it ended, and I just didn't really have an understanding for it. And I knew this was the last episode, so you're watching, you're preparing for it, and the television screen just went black, and I legitimately thought that something had happened with the internet. And then I realized, no, that's it. And I hated the ending. I didn't feel very fulfilled at the end of Sopranos. But then I kind of went back, and I watched people's YouTube theories, and I kind of read more about it, that I have grown to appreciate the end of Sopranos, that I do kind of wonder if the same thing's going to happen for Game of Thrones. I do wonder if 2-3 years down the line, now that you're not caught up in the big pop culture phenomenon, there will be a different appreciation for how this show wrapped up. I can't see it right now. Like, it's not even split. Like, it's not 50-50. It appears to be like 80-20, 90-10. I hate this season of Game of Thrones.
I haven't heard one person say yesterday was awesome or this season was awesome. It seems like it's unanimous. People didn't like it. To me, the most feel-good ending, I don't know why this comes to mind, is Cheers. At the end of Cheers, they just kind of turn off the lights and then everybody goes home.
The best ending that I've ever seen is this one. It's from The Americans.
We had a job to do.
You were my best friend.
You were mine, too. I never wanted to lie to you. Stan, what else could I do? You moved in next to me. I was terrified. And then we ended up as friends.
Friends? You made my life a joke.
It's the perfect recap for anybody that hasn't seen it. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it is the perfect ending to the story. It's the only way that it could have ended. It is one of the most underrated shows that I have ever seen.
A lot of people are mentioning Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad, I will say, I'll give Breaking Bad a lot of credit. I think it did a fantastic job of character development throughout the course of the show. And you can make a strong case that every season of Breaking Bad is better than the last one. Like, the final season of Breaking Bad is really, really good, and it ends incredibly well. Like, Breaking Bad might really be the most popular show that wraps up as neatly as it did.
The Wire is the opposite. The Wire, the fifth season, is just like, pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, the fifth season of The Wire might actually be the worst season of The Wire.
It is, definitively, objectively.
Yeah, you can make an argument for 5 or 2 if you really want to have that debate when it comes to The Wire, but I certainly won't fight you if you think that 5's the worst season. Sopranos, people were disappointed with the ending. Game of Thrones, like, Breaking Bad might actually be the show that improves season to season, character development's really good, and it ends incredibly well. If we're talking about those kind of shows, not sitcoms, like Fresh Prince has a really good ending, but I certainly wouldn't put it in the same category of a show like The Wire or Game of Thrones. Coming up in 15 minutes, we will get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. But first, Brooke Pryor thinks that the Chiefs are done making moves prior to training camp. We'll discuss it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2-6.
back in on the drive. Coming up in 10 minutes, we will get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Brooke Pryor, she writes for the Kansas City Star. She's the Chiefs beat writer, replaced Therese Paylor. Doing good work over there. She thinks that the Chiefs are done making moves prior to training camp. Quote, I get the feeling the Darren Lee trade was the last big movement before training camp. Obviously, things can change, and the Patrick Peterson suspension may factor in here, but I think they'll be quiet for a bit. The next time I'd expect to see the Chiefs make moves would be late in training camp. I think there's a couple things you can take from this. I think the Chiefs viewed defensive line, linebacker, and safety as much bigger problems than corner. Think about the resources that they've spent. We can agree they've spent significant resources on their defensive line. We don't got to go through them. We admit they've spent significant resources on their linebacker core. Draft picks, compensation, free agent signings, they've spent it. Safety. Sign Tyrann Mathieu, Juan Thornhill. You've made a significant investment at safety. They seem to believe, based on the moves they've made so far, and if Brooke Pryor is correct, in which she's hearing her feeling is that they're done making big-time moves, they didn't feel like their cornerback group was an issue and that the issue was the rest of the defense. And they think kind of by osmosis, to quote Romeo Crennel, that that is going to bolster their cornerback grouping.
And that better be the plan because they didn't do anything at the cornerback position. So by adding Frank Clark, by getting Tyrann Mathieu, by signing Emmanuel Ogba, by drafting a guy in the secondary, like you mentioned, that's their plan, is to get better all around because it's the same group of players essentially that they took into camp last year. Maybe their plan is, and Brooke Barr points out, that something's going to happen around camp. Right now, nothing's going to happen, but let's say maybe like a guy like Josh Norman gets cut right before the season begins. Couldn't you see the Chiefs taking a flyer on that type of a move?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's the only kind of moves they're going to take. I do not think they're trading another draft pick for a player like that. I think they'll either wait till the trade deadline or something changes drastically with Patrick Peterson. I do not see them trading a 2020 fifth round pick or a 2020 fourth round pick prior to the season for a corner. I think they're done making those kind of moves. Now, no one has told me this, but I think what Brooke Pryor is saying here makes a whole lot of sense, that they made their trade for a linebacker. They've made significant additions to their defense. Let's see, improvement-wise, but we know they've made big-time additions. I don't see them making another kind of move unless it's a salary cap casualty and then somebody's just available they can pick up. I don't see them making another big-time move either.
Well, that guy's not available, and they've done a pretty good job of filling holes. It'd be one thing if we were talking about they needed to add this, and they didn't go out and get Frank Clark, or they needed to add that, and they didn't sign Tyrann Mathieu. They have improved on that side of the ball. I would say they've improved to the point where last year they were 30th in pretty much every important defensive category. They could be 15th or 20th. And I think the difference between you and I is you think this defense needs to get a lot better for the Chiefs to win a Super Bowl. I just think they need to get a little bit better for them to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm at the point where I think it needs to get a lot better. I'm surprised they're this comfortable with their secondary group. That's maybe the biggest thing I'm at. I'm surprised that this entire offseason, from the moment they lost to the New England Patriots until right now, they have given off the impression that they're really happy with their cornerback group. I mean, the only significant move that they've made was Bashaud Breeland on a one-year, $2 million deal, who people are saying is basically Steven Nelson.
I was going to say, if you want to call that a significant move, that's the one move that they have made, period.
You spent a sixth-round draft pick on Rashad Fenton. We don't know a whole lot about him. He's a sixth-round draft pick. And people like the undrafted free agent Mark Fields. That's it. Everywhere else, they have added a guy, is a bona fide starter, and I would say a huge addition over what you had last year. We agree, Frank Clark is a huge improvement of what you had last year. Their linebacker core appears to be a little faster, a little bit more athletic than they were last season. No question about safety, bringing in Tyrann Mathieu and Juan Thornhill. Bashaud Breeland, at least according to what everybody is saying about it, doesn't appear to be a significant improvement. So it just tells me that you're comfortable. You think that Fuller's going to be okay. You think Breeland's going to stay healthy. And now that he has a full time with you in camp, that he's going to get off to a much better start than he did last year. You really believe in Charvarius Ward, who played 154 coverage snaps last year. You like some of your draft pick additions. They seem to be really comfortable with what they have in that secondary.
I don't think they're comfortable. I think they've backed themselves into a corner. I think that the draft happened and they went, okay, we should probably draft somebody in the secondary. And they did get Juan Thornhill, but they didn't exactly find their cornerback. I think that they thought that there was going to be a player available. And now they've gotten this late in the game that they're comfortable with the other players around the cornerback position. I feel like you're making it seem like the Chiefs feel good about their cornerback position. I bet they feel like crap about it over one Arrowhead drive. They just feel good about the rest of the team they've surrounded those cornerbacks with.
Yeah, again, I don't know how we can come to that conclusion when they didn't do anything for it. Like, They had multiple opportunities to do something to it. They've made multiple improvements everywhere else but corner. It just tells me they think their cornerback group is good.
It tells me that they're still going to do something. I mean, I understand that Brooke Pryor thinks that they're done making moves, but I think if a guy like Josh Norman gets cut right before the season begins, the Chiefs would be all over.
Yeah, I'm with you. So you're telling me their plan was to wait for Josh Norman to be released? Yeah, Josh Norman, if he gets released, he will be the most sought-after free agent that's out there. So, yes, if their plan was wait for Josh Norman to be available to go pick him up on the waiver wire, that's a fantastic plan.
They waited quite a while ways for Frank Clark. Frank Clark was the last big offseason signing.
But they traded a first-round pick to go get him. According to Brooke Pryor, they're not trading a first-round pick. Now, if their plan is to go trade for Josh Norman, yeah, you can go get him. But waiting for Josh Norman to get cut and then clear waivers and then negotiate a contract with them, yeah, that just seems like a very small percentage chance for a corner, we agree. Josh Norman would probably be this team's best corner.
Yes, absolutely. He would slide in the same way that Frank Clark slides in right away. He would be the best player at that position.
I want to play this for you. This is what Dwayne Bowe had to say. This audio is courtesy of TMZ. Dwayne Bowe on TMZ.
Really?
For something good, not something bad, not because of the ugly purple or whatever he was smoking that one time, all allegedly. Here's what Dwayne Bowe had to tell TMZ.
Feels different, man. You know, the team has switched. I only know like 5 guys on the team. And I say, these guys, like, they got a lot of positive energy. You know, just talking to Big Man, he was like, this year out of all years feels real, real different, you know? You know, it's always some adversity in the beginning. But just the way they handled adversity and the way they was out there practicing yesterday, doing phase 2 training, I was like, wow. So it's gonna be a hell of a year. I'm excited.
All right, BK, two things here. Number one, can we work on having Dwayne Bowe on the show? I mean, he just had the 1 day retirement. Dwayne Bowe, something tells me that he would love, hey Dwayne, let's talk about how great you are.
I think we get Dwayne Bowe.
I think we got a really good chance of getting Dwayne Bowe on this week. There's not like there's a whole lot happening right now. I feel like we can get Dwayne Bowe on the show, so I'm looking forward to having him on the show. Everybody agrees that this year is different. Like, Dwayne Bowe didn't really tell me something I didn't know. This is a Super Bowl or bust mentality.
You were expecting to be enlightened by Dwayne Bowe in that conversation.
No, I'm just, honestly, unless Patrick Mahomes gets hurt this season, or Kelce gets hurt, or Tyreek Hill does not play the entire season, there's no reason not to expect this team to be in the Super Bowl. All the moves they've made, the coaching, the quarterback play, I would say how down the Patriots appear to be on paper and the age of which the Patriots, I agree. Like, I don't know how anyone can disagree. This year should feel different because this is the first time in our lifetime that the Chiefs should have the reasonable belief of we are the best team in the NFL at the start of the season, not like some week 8 power ranking stuff where, you know, you play Jeff Toole and then EJ Manuel and then the schedule kind of broke your way. There should be a belief from everybody in that locker room when you leave for St. Joe, we are the best team in the NFL. We think we can win the Super Bowl. We know we should win the Super Bowl this year.
I'm a lifelong Chiefs fan, and this is the first time heading into a season that I haven't had to convince myself, well, if this breaks right and if this player doesn't get hurt and if this happens, I genuinely believe that the Chiefs are the best football team. I think they're the most talented team. I think they've got a great coach, and I think that they've got basically a 2 or 3, maybe a 4-year window with Andy and Patrick Mahomes, this being the first best year.
Coming up in 2 minutes, we will get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Don't turn that dial. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.